we collectively hold this belief that authority is real or inherent or actual in some way. So authority could be summarized as the right to rule over someone. Yeah, and it's not just the ability to rule, but more importantly, the belief that there is an inherent moral right to rule over another person. You know, nobody would ever vote for a convicted serial killer, but we elect people that have a body count hundreds of times higher than any serial killer that's ever lived.
Simply put, these strikes have saved lives.
A government can't be a servant of the people. Like we always hear, the government is here to serve the people. Well, yeah. You can't be a government and a servant at the same time. From top to bottom, from left to right, from start to finish, authority is inherently negative, control-based, and egoic.
Our currency doesn't have any backing. Tomorrow, Biden can put out an executive order that the US dollar no longer has any value and it plummets as the world's reserve currency. Right now, no one controls AI. You can't control that. It's just a technology. It's open source code. And so they are racing right now to try to, in some way, control it. If they manage to do that, we're going to find the next 100 years exactly like we found the last. What's going on, guys? Welcome back for episode 8 of the Rabbit Hole series. In today's conversation, me and my co-host Aaron are going to be diving into the illusion of authority. If you've been with us for this entire series, this episode is not going to disappoint. Me and Aaron have been patiently waiting for this final episode in which we can really bring everything together and give you guys some practical takeaways that you can walk away from today's conversation and actually integrate in your life. I'm extremely excited for today's conversation, and I'm going to hand it off to Aaron to tell us a little bit more about what we're going to be getting into today. Aaron?
You know, we've had these last 7 episodes where we kind of went more into the nuances of the 3D realm and the material realm of, you know, this is how the Matrix functions in our reality, in the physical reality. We're going to end this conversation by going into the non-physical realm, the realm of the philosophy behind the system or behind the Matrix, which is what we have summarized as the illusion of authority. So, you know, this conversation, Jeremy, for some people is going to actually be a red pill that they didn't expect because we collectively hold this belief that authority is real or inherent or actual in some way. To the extent we don't even know we believe it, right? Until we really start thinking about some of these questions we're going to lay out today, we start to realize, wow, I really do have a belief that something inherently is superior to me and that I'm obligated to obey that power. We're going to wake up to that part of us in this episode. So, you know, when we begin this conversation, I think we have to start off with, what is authority? What does that word mean? What are we implying when we use that word? And so I think firstly, the illusion of authority is twofold, right? Because all illusions are dualistic in nature. And so we have to speak in terms of duality to explain them. So the belief in authority is the belief, sort of two beliefs, right? The belief in a ruler's right to rule, and then the belief in one's obligation to obey that ruler. They're really one thing, right? But they kind of appear like two separate concepts. So authority could be summarized as the right to rule over someone. Yeah, and it's not just the ability to rule, but more importantly, the belief that there is an inherent moral right to rule over another person, whether it's a king, a priest, a government official. We could go on and on with different examples of leaders, but this very concept of authority over contradicts natural law. And we began this show for a reason, talking about natural law and God's law, because that's the foundation and the basis upon which we understand what freedom is and what freedom should look like when it's actualized, right? That all beings are created equal, endowed by their creator with the same inalienable rights, which means that no one in this universe has any inherent right, moral or otherwise, to rule over anyone else or to possess certain rights that anyone else doesn't get to possess, right? So we see this philosophy, authority, rampant in our society, yeah? And our government and all world leaders, all nations in the world run off of this illusion that there is a moral right for some group of people to rule over everyone else.
Yep.
You know, the fact that the president can order a drone strike in Syria that kills dozens of innocent lives, and the same day call for the arrest of a whistleblower or let's say even someone who committed murder, right? Well, who's the president to indict someone for murder when he just drone striked 25 people? Oh, well, he had the illusion of authority when he did it. So it's okay that he did it, that he killed 25 people. This serial killer guy over here, he didn't have the authority label. So we labeled what he did bad. You know, nobody would ever vote for a convicted serial killer, but we elect people that have a body count hundreds of times higher than any serial killer that's ever lived. But we don't even realize that or see it as a bad thing to do because we have this illusion that they're an authority figure that we're obligated to vote for and to obey.
That's an amazing point. The programming runs deep, and it's one of those things where it's like, I've thought about this for a long time. Since I was a teenager, I started to think about these types of things. What I'm referencing is like, we're born into this world and it just kind of already is how it is. And life starts kind of like speeding up. It's almost like when you're a kid, life seems slow. You just want to like get older faster. But then like life seems to like speed up as we add complexity. And before you know it, it's like you've just adopted all this stuff. Like you don't really, there's no way you can grant yourself the space and knowledge capacity at the age that you need it to like filter. Does that make sense? Because I've thought about this a lot. Like, could this have been avoided? And it's like, I don't see.
No way.
Yeah, it's no way too much from all sides. It's overwhelming. But my larger point is just kind of like, it's fascinating to me. Like, we're just like born into this world and there's just so much that we don't think twice about. It's just like, oh yeah, that's what the president does. Or you ask your parents something, you know, you're 8 years old and they're like, they're getting mad at you because you keep saying why, but why, but why? And they're like, that's just how it is. Like, because they don't know. And like, I got a lot of that when I was a kid. And I think what you're talking about is just another multiple examples of just another, that's just how it is. And it's interesting because like, number one, these concepts, they're not very old, right? Like we're always speaking to like a lot of what we talk about started around 1890, 1900, 1910 range. A lot of this isn't very old. And we so quickly adopt things and can't see outside of them. Like we can't imagine that there was a time when there wasn't a thing called a president or like a government in the way that we have it right now, et cetera. And it's like, it's only been a few hundred years.
Well, also we have working against us the fact that we all were raised, almost everyone, with parents that told us it was wrong to question authority, right? Yeah. As a virtue, you should never question authority. Mm-hmm. And that's because our parents wanted us not to question them because they really, you know, for the most of us really did have our best interest in mind and really were trying to protect us. But as a kid can only translate that to, okay, I should never question any authority, no teacher, no official, no nobody. I should just let them rule me. So it's like, yeah, we're indoctrinated to believe this from childhood, just like our parents were and everybody was. So it's a collective human consciousness belief. No one's guilty of it and no one did it to themselves, right? We woke up inside of this, but nevertheless, this is why I teach service to others from the law of one, Jeremy, because what it really is, what it really looks like from a true service to others perspective is that we would create a society where there is no ruling class or servant class, where like we understand inherently that a government can't be a servant of the people. Like we always hear, the government is here to serve the people. Well, you can't be a government and a servant at the same time. You can't rule over someone.
Govern. Yeah, word govern and serve
them, right? You're doing one or the other. So in a truly enlightened civilization of service to others, there will be no governments, there will be no authorities, because we'll create a society that is equally incentivizing to everyone to do good to one another, such that crime just disappears over time because people realize committing crime is unnecessary. We don't need to commit crime to get our needs met, number one. And number two, I'm just the one who suffers. It always comes back on me. I'm the one who carries the punishment of crime. So then there's no more incentive to commit crime, right? Crime, in a sense, is like a subconscious rebellion against a corrupt society and an unfair legal system and an unfair justice system. And so you get lots and lots of crime, right? As a natural kind of unconscious protest from humanity. So yeah, we need to understand the spiritual truth behind freedom and versus authority so that we can actually feel empowered in it and understand that questioning authority is a virtuous thing to do because you're abiding by natural law when you do that. Natural law says we're all equal and we're all equally entitled to keep the balance of harmony in the universe. So it's the law of do no harm, as we said. So at that point, if do no harm is your intention in life, then you will naturally question everything that you hear and see and learn and authority figures who tell you to do things. You'll start questioning those things because you're like, is that in the highest good of humanity? Is that for the benefit of all? And you'll start saying, oh, wow, most of this isn't. It's a direct detriment of all of humanity. So it's my obligation to not participate now. All these things wake up in you naturally as you raise your awareness and discover your own innate inner freedom.
I want to go back to one of the first things that you brought up. I think there's definitely a good amount there to go into. So you mentioned this concept of it also having to do with the programming we receive from our parents, which is usually well-meaning, but it's basically, you know, don't question authority, et cetera, et cetera. What kind of kid and teenager was Aaron Abke?
Oh, very obedient.
Very obedient?
Good little pastor's boy, yeah.
Okay. So we were polar opposites.
Nice.
That makes this partnership in this series that much more
yin and yang,
divine. Bro. You can go one of two ways, right? When you have, I'm a fan of Jordan Peterson's teachings of like chaos and order, kind of seeing things that way. I don't know if you're familiar, but so this whole chaos and order thing, right? So the world is generally, for the most part, inherently chaos. And you could argue that one of the ways that humans can improve their life is to impose structure and order on some of that chaos. When you have parents who are extremely at the far end of the spectrum of trying to impose order on the chaos, but you're a child, you're a teenager, you're wanting to experience chaos, you are chaos. It can go one of two ways. And we had like similar parental structure styles and upbringings. And I was definitely like the good kid out of me and my sister until I wasn't. Like it just... It was too much. And then one day it kind of went the other way in terms of I had to find out everything that we now talk about. It's so ironic how life works, right? Because I just something inside of me would not let me not find these things out for myself and not question authority for myself. And it's like, well, what's on the other side? It's kind of like if there's just this door in your house and your entire life you've been told never open that door. And you're just like, I'm dying to know what is behind that door. The irony is that that door was the worldly world that my parents were trying to protect me from. Like you could say that door was Satan in a certain sense. It was the secular world, as they would call it, right? But instead of losing myself in the secular world, that's where I found myself. Because if you don't experience that, you don't have the contrast. And so I think that gave me a hell of a perspective of and relationship to authority from a young age. Yeah, I just wanted to kind of so I wanted to get your end of that as well. So like around what period of your life would you say you really started to question some of these assumptions and evolve your relationship to obediently following authority?
It began for me when I came out of religion, for sure, at 23. I started questioning stuff about my religion around 18, but was terrified to tell anyone until I was in my early 20s and made a quick shift when I decided I didn't believe in that version of God anymore. And at that point, I was willing to question anything because God was my entire life. My entire existence was my belief in God. So when that went away, it was like something needed to fill that void. And so I just wanted to question everything. And that's what eventually led me down rabbit trails like this.
So I think that's helpful context because I feel like a lot of our viewers, especially your community, has like a very similar background. And I think we all have our own story of like when that shift occurred, when you went from like being spoon-fed to like thinking for yourself, realizing there's not even a box, if that makes sense.
Yeah. If we're using the slave and master analogy or archetype, that's the kind of relationship we have with our government and ruling class. We could call that the slave mind, the part of us that believes that this power structure has a right to exist and a right to rule us, and we have an obligation to obey. We could call that the slave mind. I know that's an intense label, but it just works from an analogy perspective. Mm-hmm. We're all to some degree infected with the slave mind. We have to begin there and accept that. And again, no one did this. It just happened to you. But it is a fact of the matter that this is embedded in our society, into the fabric of society from our birth. You know, they're teaching you how to be a good slave from childhood when they put you at an 8-hour basically work camp called school, and you live your whole life growing up as a kid, learning how to be a good slave, right? How to listen to authority and obey, to the extent that some of you, even now watching this video, probably feel like this is a radical conversation. You know, even that's a symptom of how deeply conditioned we are to be slaves and to believe in authority. And another problem is when we hear the word slave, we think of someone who's shackled hand and foot, walking in a line through the desert behind a camel, and that's just one type of slave. In some arguments, you could say not even the worst kind of slave. So enslavement just means you've given someone the right to rule over you. You don't have your inherent God-given rights at your disposal anymore, right? If you try to express a certain right that your divine creator gave you, someone might punish you for it. So that's where we start to see the similarities between the government and something we deem bad, like a street gang. It's like, well, what really is the difference in what the government does versus what a street gang does? Like, you know, if a street gang, someone from a street gang runs you off the road and pulls you over and demands you at gunpoint to pay them a large sum of money, everybody would say that that was a crime, right? But when a police officer does it, we're like, oh, it's authority. You just got to do it, whatever they ask. Totally normal. Well, what's the actual difference? One of those two people had the illusion of authority, so you just complied and gave the money up like a good slave. The other was against your free will. So it's like, that's a small example of what the government is doing in every capacity, acting like some kind of gang member, like an early gang from the 1930s or whatever. Was it Italians? It was Italians, right?
I don't know. Are we talking like the movie Gangs of New York?
The mafia is the word I'm thinking of. Yes.
Oh, okay. Like
gangs
okay,
the of mafias. New York. That was like early gangs, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like during
they acted like mini governments.
The 20s and 30s.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. When you watch those movies, right? Aren't they going around acting like governments?
Yeah.
Totally. Right.
I mean, back then it was like gangs and police were a lot more even.
Exactly.
Like, debatably, gangs were more powerful, to yep. be honest. Yeah.
So then let's zoom out to like this myth we call the consent of the governed. Mm-hmm. We say, and it's a maxim of law, actually, that the government is ruled by the consent of the governed. Mm-hmm. The government operates by the consent of the governed.
Right.
This is what we're told, but is it true? Have you given any consent to any of the bills Congress has passed lately? Mm-hmm. Did you consent or have the right to not consent to sending Ukraine $115 billion in the last year, printing $12 trillion over the pandemic? Did you consent to any of that? Could you have non-consented to it? Can you tell our military to not go to war, or can we, the people, rise up and tell the military to stop going to war? We can't do any of that stuff, can we? So the consent of the governed is just a nice thing we say, kind of like the government is here to serve the people. The government works for us, not us for the government. You hear that all the time in freedom circles. It's like, but is that our reality though? Not at all. We were told that we vote for politicians, for example, to represent us. And that's our free, you know, system of law. And then they're supposed to make laws on our behalf that benefit we the people. But what actually happens? Is that the reality at all? No. The elections are, number one, completely manipulated, as we've seen lately. Two, when those people we elect get into office, they're immediately met by dozens of lobbyists who start paying them millions of dollars to make laws in their favor. So it's like, now we live in a world where politicians that work for corrupt organizations make all of our laws against our consent, and everyone has to either obey or be punished. Does that sound like a free country to you?
No. No, not me. So a few things came to mind when you're talking about that. Have you seen the clip of the ex-IRS commissioner speaking before Congress, calling it a voluntary system and multiple times reiterating like taxes are a voluntary system? So
it was like 2013, right?
Yeah, it's a few years old.
We have to maintain the confidence in the system because it's a voluntary system of payment of our taxes.
Agreed.
I always show my students that. When I'm teaching certain things, because it's kind of hard to believe. But so that's one of the things that came to mind when you're talking about consent of the governed. It's like people don't, I don't think people really realize like so many of our systems. Another example is like the way that the dollar works. Like we have a fiat dollar. There's nothing backing it. Like so much of what seems like these impenetrable, like I'll use the metaphor of like as if they're made out of like cement or granite, like they're indestructible systems. When in reality, they're like a house of cards. They're like illusory. Like our currency doesn't have any backing. Tomorrow, Biden can put out an executive order that the U.S. dollar no longer has any value and it's plummets as the world's reserve currency, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you can't go to your bank and exchange it. And the same thing with like, you know, taxation and so much of what we've talked about in the series around contracts and such, right? It might be confusing when you're talking about like consenting and such, because a lot of people are probably thinking like they didn't consent, but a lot of this is like acquiescence and some of the stuff we've talked about in regards to like contracts being implied on our behalf and assumed on our behalf. And then even outside of that, it's like, well, how many of you vote? How many of you are registered for voting? Like all of these little things, right? These are all little micro contracts that they interpret, that they intentionally interpret in a different way than you're aware of.
And you're not given full disclosure. You're not told, or you don't understand the terms of the contract at all. No one's explained them to you. All of that is mandatory in contract law. So even though they're getting around this with kind of trickery and like wordplay, it's still fraud and it's still unlawful and violates natural law. But we got to stop participating in it if it's ever going to go away. And you know, we could see like in examples of all the different branches of government is another great example of proving the fact that the government definitely doesn't have the consent of the governed, or they wouldn't need all these agencies to enforce their laws with, right? Law enforcement, FBI, CIA, ATF, DHA, we could go on and on and on. All these three-letter organizations, the government doesn't actually have our consent to do anything it does. It operates completely freely in the electoral system. And so they have to make so many branches of government to control every little system, because what they're doing is fraud. Ultimately, it's shields of defense, of protection, right? So like when we're talking about this, I can hear some people's skeptical mind arguing things like, well, you can't just never have any authority over you. Like who's going to teach you and instill discipline and all this different stuff? And so I want to make clear that what we're not saying is that you should never let someone teach you or give you instructions, or you should never listen or learn from someone. We're only talking about an enforced or inherent right that obligates you to obey someone, whether you like it or not. That's authority. But there's many service to others kind of relationships where it looks like what we would think of as authority, but actually aren't based in authority and work perfectly and beautifully. One would be the teacher-student relationship. Teacher-student is a mutually agreed relationship. The student can leave anytime they want, you know, and the teacher can leave anytime they want. So everyone's free will is being honored. So there's no authority in that. There's just the acknowledgement that one has more knowledge than another, and there's going to be an exchange. Yeah. Coach and athlete is another example. Boss and employee, therapist and client. Like none of these things imply that one person is superior to the other, but you know, like a coach-athlete relationship, both are benefiting because the coach gets to do what they love. The athlete gets to learn and grow skills in something. So whenever it's service to others based in unity, there's always a giving and receiving in the relationship. Where's the giving and receiving in a ruler and ruled, you know, government and a ruling class and a slave class? Where's the mutual giving and receiving there? It's just taking and keeping, right? Like they feed off of the populace, our credit, our life force, everything to supply only for themselves. To everything they do is selfish, right? So that's how we can see authority at work, is it will always be a one-way street.
It kind of reminds me of like, you know how in Western medicine, like they're like, here, take this pill. And then a week later, you have to go back to the doctor because you're having side effects. And they're like, oh, you need this pill to counteract the side effects of this pill. And then a few weeks later, you need a third pill to counteract the side effects that the second pill, which was counteracting the side effects of the first pill, has given you.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that with the government organizations. It's like because of the way they go about it, it's like, oh, we need this new government bureau to enforce what the original government bureau is doing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you need a, for the second one's regulations, then you need a third one to oversee the regulation of the second one that's regulating of the first one.
And they're always on and creating on. Authorities.
Yeah, and it's like all of them are synthetic derivatives. Really, all of this, everything we're talking about at the highest level that I can see goes to this conversation of like, you're either walking with God or you're worshiping a false idol in a certain sense. They're signed under God, which means that you're a child of God and you have a very few simple rules and life is extremely simple. There's not complexity to it. And that's actually inside of your DNA, unless you're like, point, I don't know the exact statistic, but notably less than 1% of people, which are psychopaths. But outside of that, you could say that it is inside of your DNA intrinsically. It's not something you have to even try to do. That like we have automatic mechanisms called guilt and shame and things like that for a reason that keep you inside of the boxes that your creator wanted you, right? That's kind of the moral argument. But then there's this other realm where, and I think we've posted this in past videos, but kind of like the hierarchy of law, if you remember that kind of infographic, Aaron, where we have our different branches of law, whether it's like tort law or common law or statutory law or whatever, right? There's all these different branches of law, but at the very top is God's word. And then the more you come down, the more it gets diluted. So like common law is only a little bit down from God's law. And that's why it's a much more potent, aligned, spiritually centered way to follow. It's a more spiritual ideology that you could tap into. And that's felt in both its simplicity and the fruits that it bears. And even when you study it, it's obvious. But then you keep going down and it's like there's an inverse relationship between the vibration and the frequency and the level of alignment to the teachings and the amount of complexity. Those two seem to be inverse. So like the more you get down from God's word, it's like adding complexity. And it's dropping vibration. And at the lowest is what we're talking about, which is the realm of man-made statutory law, where it's like Congress passes what they want. And we can just, the existing government is already out of control and they can elect an entirely new branches of government, entirely new bureaus and organizations and overseeing committees and all these things. And it's like, if we trace it back, it's as simple as just understanding that we got away from God's law, our very first episode title. We got away from God's law. And as soon as you take a bite of the proverbial apple, well, now you can be anything and you can listen to anything you want and you can define anything you want and you don't have to agree on first principles. Now everything opens up. And that seems like freedom to a lot of people, particularly the left. I'm apolitical. Don't get me started on that in the comments. Just that's what they tend to be called, is the left. It seems like freedom, but it's an illusion, which the proverbial devil is extremely good at illusions, right? It's dressed up in a sexy dress called freedom. But when that dress comes off, it's actually the exact opposite. It's complexity, confusion, and degradation because it's introducing, like I said, synthetic derivatives. And there's no natural law that speaks to the ability for synthetic derivatives to ever produce anything good. At the most foundational level. So any other conversation of like, how are we going to drain the swamp or let's clean up Congress, or it's like, zoom the fuck out. The conversation is not like we need this electoral candidate instead of this candidate, or we need a Republican instead of a Democrat, or we need to reduce the size of government, or we need to fix Congress, or we need a woman president, or we need a black president. Like, zoom out. We don't need any of that. This is a much higher level, but at the same time, simpler conversation. And it's just so strange to me that no one has that conversation. Like, it seems to not even be a thought.
Well, we're having it now. So that's a sign of progress, right?
Facts.
This is a good topic to drill into, actually, Jeremy, that, you know, both sides of the political aisle get freedom wrong for different reasons. But when we're talking about the left, which represents the feminine polarity, the right typically represents the masculine polarity. In the feminine, it's all about emotions and feeling. What I feel is most important. And when that gets out of balance, because feelings are important, but for a deeper reason, right? But when it gets out of balance and feelings become God, you get the crazy radical left stuff that we see in the culture today. And one of the main components, I think, Jeremy, that people who gravitate towards leftism don't see is that there is no such thing as a good authority. And that's the big problem that the left has, is that they want to outsource so much of their power to an authority. And that feels empowering to them to be like, well, we have the government and they serve us. So pay my taxes and give me free healthcare and give me universal basic income. You know, you're my slave type of thing.
Yep.
You're just here to meet my needs. And it's like, look, here's how it works. When you outsource your basic needs to literally anyone, you become a puppet on their strings. Mm-hmm. You can't depend on something outside of yourself to supply your basic needs, or you are throwing yourself into a prison cell. There's no easier way to control somebody than by controlling their basic needs. So this is what, for all the things the right doesn't see, this is one thing they do typically see, which is, well, if we just pay everyone free healthcare, that's going to completely put all of our healthcare in the government's hands. And at any moment, they could be like, haha, take this medical product, or we're going to remove your healthcare. Or sign up for this digital banking currency, or we're going to take away your healthcare. They can force us to do anything they want if our health is in their hands. So that sounds like a terrifying idea to people on the right. So it's like that idea thrives because there's a belief that an authority can be good and have good intentions, but the idea of authority itself is inherently negative and service to self-based. So it can't, like Jesus said, a good tree can't produce bad fruit and a bad tree can't produce good fruit. So it's like the human ego is still too big at this stage of our collective evolution to be able to give anyone authority to rule over someone and expect them to use it virtuously and not for their own best interest. We're just not at that stage yet. So it's utter foolishness to think that we could give anyone the kind of, you know, wealth and power and rights that we've given to our ruling class in the world and expect them not to weaponize it against us, to take power over us. That's a pipe dream, that we're not at that stage yet. So instead, we have to build systems that are private, decentralized, mutually beneficial, and do whatever we possibly can, if and when we make it out of this mess, to never build another system that becomes a pyramid structure, where one person or people can rise to power and become the new masters, right? That'll be humanity's big challenge going forward after we get out of this challenge. I'm a big optimist, man, about humanity's future. Although it's easy to say right now, like, it's questionable if we're gonna live through this one. I think that's just kind of the intensity of the moment, you know? So let's get into that then. Let's talk about how would a society function without a government? What could that look like in the future if we can accomplish that?
Mm-hmm.
We have to first get it into our mind that authority is not like a noble idea that sometimes goes wrong. Authority is not basically a valid concept that sometimes gets corrupted, though. From top to bottom, from left to right, from start to finish, authority is inherently negative, control-based, and egoic. So, like, once we get that, that will be the foundation upon which new creativity will arise in the human mind of ways we can do things and govern ourselves equally and mutually, you know, create a society of equals, a leaderless society. We will know how to do that once we've fully been divested of our belief in authority. If it hangs on at all, right, we're going to recreate another authority system on accident. So that's a big point, I think, before we get into this conversation. But when we talk about how could it look, the first thing is we don't need to know all the answers. We don't need to have all the solutions already planned out. Like Jeremy said, we can trust God. We can trust the universe that evolution will happen and new ways, new means will come available to us to invent entirely new systems. But like, we have to have that trust that if we're willing to say no to the old system and goodbye to the old system, as we turn towards the universe and say, help us, we're ready to evolve, we have to trust it that it will show us the new system, right? And most of what we're talking about today is covered incredibly well in this book called The Most Dangerous Superstition by Larkin Rose. If you like this conversation and you want to deepen your understanding and articulation of this to help others, this is an amazing book to read. A lot of what I'm talking about today was inspired from this book. When we talk about this, Larkin actually says, like, we don't need to know answers before we start making change, because that's not how evolution works. And you brought up evolution, Jeremy. Evolution works in the present moment as we just take the next step in front of us, right?
Yeah.
That's
it's
how
inherent. It's like inherent, something right? in That's our DNA. It just happens. You can't see the second step until you take the first one.
Right. So as we do that, we will start to naturally evolve these systems that are mutually beneficial, right? One way we can see how this happens organically and naturally, as we just said, is the internet, for example. Does the internet need a government? Would any of us want the internet to be governed by a regulatory body that tells us what we can or can't do on the internet? Everyone would say hell no to that.
They are.
They are, technically, but you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
We don't want the internet to have a government.
Right.
Internet functions just great without a government, actually. Everything's available all the time. We can all do whatever's in our own best interest. We like it that way. You know, people say, well, if there's no government, everything will be mass chaos and hysteria, you know. And let's question that. Is that true? Is there mass chaos and hysteria in places where there's no governments? You know, a public beach on a sunny summer day, flooded with people. Do we need a government to regulate all the people on the beach? No, it functions just fine, doesn't it? Public parks, malls, like anywhere where a public space where people congregate in mass numbers, is there always insanity and chaos breaking out? No, in fact, it's usually really harmonious when there's just a natural inflow and outflow of people in a space where if there is a problem, lots of people rush to the aid of that person. It's inherent in us to want to be of service to each other. And we're all benefiting from the space, right? When a power system brainwashes people to all believe one single idea and never question it, then the public gatherings become corrupt and dangerous and chaotic, right? That's when they become like violent mobs and riots and whatnot because of the groupthink that the power structure creates. All groupthink comes from a power structure. That's why we call it propaganda. It's what the authority is putting out to mind control the masses with. That's what propaganda means. So actually, without a government, we wouldn't have any of those problems. And you say, well, actually, yeah, I think we the people could probably do just fine if we could just govern ourselves freely. And it's not such a scary idea, right?
I think that it'll land the best if we entertain all sides of the conversation. So I want to get your feedback on a thought or two around this conversation because... So let me lay some context. A while back when I think we were going on vacation, so me and Jax were, we were on a long flight. And so I was just having some fun with my audience and I was doing like some polls on my Instagram story. Yes or no polls. Like, are you aware of this or do you believe this or do you think this? And it was strictly conspiracy stuff. I'll just use that word so you all understand what I mean, even though most of us know what's up with conspiracies.
You were just posting facts is what you
mean. Yeah, basically, but we could call them conspiracy. So I was just gauging my audience, right? Like, what do you guys think? Was this what's going on with 9/11? Like, what do you think about this? So I asked some questions about this conversation. And at that time, I was really like, think this was like something I was really sitting with at that time in my life. This conversation of government and authority. And I asked my audience, basically, how many of you would prefer to have no government? And I want to say like 85 to 90 said no government. Then I asked, now this is biased because of the stuff I post and who's going to vote on it. But just then I asked, no police force, no sheriffs, nothing like that. No FBI, CIA, like basically that. Policy enforcers that are going to arrest you, etc. Again, like 90%. I was very surprised by this and probably not going the direction you think I'm going. Because so after that, I started to sit with it. I'm like, oh my God, 9 out of 10 of them. So then, as you know, Aaron, and the audience, hopefully, I'm like a history guy. Never thought I'd say that in my life. Hated history in school. Now I know why. It was never a learner in school. Couldn't stand. It was so boring. But I find myself nonetheless. When it actually matters to your life and you realize like life is crazier than a video game, history becomes super actually important. Enthralling.
Yeah.
So I'm just thinking about history. And so there's two things just to stay on track here. I'm going to finish this history thread and I want your opinion on that. Then I also want to bring up this concept of hierarchies in nature. So the history thread, it seems if you study any semblance of human history, we were... You could say were or are, I guess I'll say were, but really it's are, savages. And that's obviously our lower level animal self. And I know you're of the belief that like your perspectives are that we can transcend that. And that's kind of what the point of your teachings are, right? Is helping up level our consciousness so that we no longer act like the lower level animal.
Transcend or integrate it. Yeah.
Right. But my thoughts are humanity is 8 billion people. A chunk of them don't even have like running water or like food and are like in really low level conditions. So like maybe the first world could maybe realistically stand a chance of having their basic needs met to where they could prioritize things like spiritual evolution. But it seems that a lot of the world is more in the animal way of life. And so I want to get your opinion on like, so to tie it into the poll that I did, because I'm going somewhere with that. So if we acknowledge that the world's like that, and if you study before civilizations had a semblance of like a government and some semblance of crime enforcement, it was like absolutely barbaric.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'm curious, like, are your perspectives just that we can get past that? Because my thoughts are I'm kind of the camp that if right now I went and the police ceased to exist, any government enforcement agencies in terms of like arresting people and such ceased to exist, I think it would look like one of those horror movies, like The Purge or whatever that one was called, because we're not ready for that. I'm not stating any of this as fact. This is things I've thought about, and I'm curious of like your perspective on that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And my initial answer is, I think there's some truth to that, that we're not quite ready to be free yet. But I think maybe a larger ingredient is that those kinds of very dangerous societies with lots of gang violence, gun violence, are actually a product of an authoritarian government being in place that creates super poor, impoverished classes, super wealthy, rich, ruling elite classes. The more you move the poles away from each other, the more challenging and turbulent it gets in between, right?
Yep.
So that's why they want to destroy and wipe out the middle class and just have like this super poor populace that feeds off the government and then a super rich elite class that controls everything. That's what they want. So a lot of crime is due to that. I think if you just snap the finger and it all went away, then yeah, a lot of people would say, oh, I can go steal and not get caught and all this crazy stuff. But if we slowly evolve into a society like that, I think it wouldn't be that way. I think it would actually be very harmonious. And this is like, we have to get outside the box of what we mean when we say authority is no regulations, no rules, no nothing. It's not what we mean. We mean everything is in mutual benefit of everyone. It's the giving and receiving relationship. So every law equally benefits everyone. Everyone has equal rights. Upon that basis is how we interact with each other. And so people that are not at that state of consciousness yet, like you mentioned, it's because they still have a kind of fear of freedom, where freedom to them sounds like chaos. And, you know, that's because most people have lived their whole lives surrounded by authoritarian hierarchies. So they have a hard time even beginning to imagine what a society of equals would look like. They still associate, you know, authority with safety. And this is why people, like we've seen recently, more so in like Canada and Australia than here in the States. But during the pandemic, we saw a lot of people like selling out their next door neighbor to the government, right? Because they weren't following
crazy.
Yeah, like, can you imagine a more insane thing to do?
I forgot about that. Yeah, I'd be like, I'm moving.
Yeah, like,
I'm out.
This is why people will literally, you know, when the government issues a new dictate, when the government issues a new mandate, they'll literally sacrifice their neighbor to obey it. Because
I just remembered, weren't they offering payments? Like, you got
the government
paid.
Offered to pay in some cases.
Yeah, yeah. You got paid if you ratted out your neighbor.
Yeah. So it's like that shows that they still see their neighbor as their enemy and the government as their ally.
Right, right, right.
That's because of the division that the government has created. So it's like they create the division that causes the wild, wild west type of scenarios to manifest in a society that's totally equal and like incentivizes everyone. Doesn't mean everyone has the same wealth. It doesn't mean everyone has the same status or something. It just means that everyone has the same opportunity to that, and you can live your life as you want, and no one's going to force you to live in a way you don't want to live. As long as you abide by the law of do no harm, then you can live freely. You brought up about law, like what if someone commits a crime and then there's no police to arrest him and no court to try him? We're not saying we wouldn't have things like courts or people who would work as officers. Like, it would all be done in the private by we the people, They wouldn't be government created structures that now all the employees exist to serve the government and not really the people. Mm. And so you get police that beat the shit out of citizens all the time. And it's like, wait a minute, I thought your only job was to protect people. And now you're just beating the shit out of people who aren't wearing a mask or whatever. That's because they don't serve the people. They serve the government because they're made by the government. That which one creates, one controls. So this is why, you know, people on the right will be big on the private sector and everything should be done through the private sector. This is why they believe that, because every structure the government creates will inherently exist only to serve the government and will have the illusion of serving the people so as to pacify us, but it will not actually ever serve us, nor could it ever serve us. And that's a point of view I ascribe to, just because that's the nature of the ego, right? It's entirely self-focused and selfish. Mm-hmm. And so when you give lots of power to something, it will enhance the ego in it. It's not complicated, really.
You just brought up really good clarification, because I wasn't even fully clear on exactly how you would define what, you know, we're talking about here, how it would look. So there would be structures and such. It would just be an equality thing. So what I'm thinking about is, you mentioned, I forget exactly how you phrase it, but basically it would be an actually equal society or whatever, where everyone, you said there would be differences in wealth and such, but it would be fully fair, basically. So there wouldn't be the animosity between the rich and the poor, because they understand that, like, it's a rigged system.
Yes.
What's interesting is that this system now that we have, it was that. This is the best we've ever done. And when it started, it was pretty fair. It got corrupted.
How long did it take?
That's the question.
Not that long.
Not that long. It's kind of like, as soon as it had its potential, it was exploited. Back to the human nature conversation of, are systems to blame or is human nature to blame?
Right.
It's exactly. Like a chicken and the egg thing of like, oh, capitalism. And it's like, really? Because you take any system, humans will do what humans do. Like, they hopped on that real quick. Rockefeller, Rothschild, the families that created the Fed, Vanguards, Vanderbilts, they didn't take long at all. But the thing is like, so then the conversation of like how a new system and such where equality is that, it's like, it would be exploited, because it's almost like if you look at humanity as this like big, everyone's in this big bubble, right? That's humanity. Being in the ego is an addiction in and of itself. There is a weird like reward system of being asleep to the ego. So some aren't going to want to give that up.
Nope.
Right? They don't want to take the syringe out of their arm.
Right.
And so that's an interesting nuance here. I'm just like, just to clarify, I agree with you on everything we're talking about. I just think it's important. We'd be doing people a disservice if we were like hopping on here being really like airy-fairy naive. So like, we're not like that. Like, this is a practical conversation. So like, I want to make sure we get practical and see that like, we don't have all the solutions at all. We're just having a conversation. But I do want to paint the picture of like, here are some solid ideas. And at the same time, here are challenges, because we're going to have to figure this out.
Oh yeah, there will be challenges, but like, would you prefer those challenges or the exactly. ones we have now
type yeah.
of thing?
And hopefully today's conversation, I think, painted that of, this was very macro, abstract, higher level. It's not a simple conversation. And so you may be walking away from today's video with more questions than answers. And I would call that a success. The reason we haven't really made much progress with conversations like these is because people want to solve them in a sitting, which means you're not asking nearly deep enough questions and you haven't even identified the first principles or the mechanisms or the levers that actually need to be talked about. So even in today's conversation, I feel like me and Aaron got closer to the levers that seem to be at the truth of the matter, but I wouldn't even say we're there by any means. So it's like, this is just one conversation and we need a lot more of these. And maybe the most helpful takeaway would just be people getting to observe how this kind of conversation goes. Because just so you guys know, I had no idea like what Aaron wanted to get into today in terms of specifics. And he had no idea what I was going to say, right? That's probably why you guys watch this. Like, podcasts in general are cool because you get to see that whole long form nature of the conversations and such. And so we were, at least on my end, I'm thinking it out in real time, trying to articulate, what am I even trying to say? Or what am I even trying to ask? And that alone is complicated sometimes to actually get to the root of that, because it's not a simple conversation. So
for sure,
really enjoyed today's chat. Hopefully you guys did too. We'd love to hear from you guys in the comments below what your biggest takeaway is. And if you have anything to contribute to the conversation in terms of if you feel like you have brilliant ideas that we missed in terms of solutions or questions. Either way, this is a conversation. This is not like, I mean, to make it ironic, it's not us lecturing you. That would be authoritarian, right? Yeah, I'll pass it off to you, Aaron.
Although this is the last episode we plan to do, this is by no means probably a last episode ever on this topic. So we're open to, like Jeremy said, any requests you may have of topics you want to hear us talk about or tackle. We can totally keep this an ongoing thing, but we worked really hard to put together some kind of comprehensive series that we felt would best deliver this message to the world, really. Yep. And if I had to summarize that message, Jeremy, I would probably say, in sticking with our Matrix themes here, that you are Morpheus and you are Neo, both. You are the one who must wake up from the Matrix and leave the Matrix. You are the one. And you are also the one who's going to tell people to wake up, right? You're also the one who's going to go give people the choice of a red or blue pill. You're not going to force feed them red pills, but you're going to open your hand and say red pill or blue pill. You have to play both of those functions if our society is going to evolve forward. And we hope that this series, if it did nothing else, that it inspired you to be the Morpheus and Neo in your life and in your community.